All right, here we are. Welcome back to the Stronger Stride podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for tuning in. And we are so excited to get this episode out to you today. It is with the wonderful author, Joanna Garten. Now, Joanna has recently written a book called All in Stride, and it is a journey in running, courage, and the search for the American dream. So we're super excited to chat to Joanna all about her book and the stories within it. And we can't wait for you guys to hear the episode.
Yeah, really cool this episode as well, because one of the athletes that she talks about in her book, Sammy Schultz, we actually have coming on the podcast in a couple of weeks. So, well, when I say coming on, we've already done the interview, but you guys will get to hear it in a couple of weeks. So I feel like it's a nice sort of full circle getting to hear all angles about the athlete journey. So we're very excited to bring this episode to you.
Yeah, it's a really nice one. And I think it was really nice to hear Joanna's story as well, how she got into running when she was younger. And her mum was running marathons, which was kind of a little bit more rare at that time for women to be running marathons as well. And also something really special about this book that I found quite interesting was the foreword at the start of the book is from Catherine Switzer, who you would all, if you all imagine, there's a photo of a woman running in a marathon and they tried to kick her out. So she was the first woman to ever officially run a marathon, but she was under a different name. That is Catherine Switzer. Now she is part of this book in the foreword. So that was a really cool story to hear kind of how that connection came about as well. And then, yeah, we talked about Shadrach and Elvin, who you'll hear in the episode. Joanna speaks about their stories and we dive into a lot about their history as well, which I won't give too much away because you can tune in and hear it all very soon. But we really hope you enjoy the episode and also check out her book. We'll have the link below. We touched on obviously a few topics and stories throughout the book, but I think it's such a worthwhile story to understand a little bit deeper into all the details of what went on for these individuals and their journeys within running and within sport. We'll definitely recommend you checking that out.
And thank you guys, if you're a longtime supporter listening to the podcast or if it's your first episode, thank you so much for being here. We love the support. We love the kind messages. We love the downloads. We love the Google reviews. We love it when you share the podcast on Instagram.
Reviews. So
the Google reviews. Oh, I don't know. What are they called? Podcast reviews. We love the reviews, the Spotify reviews. Okay.
That's it. You
get what I mean. If you want to Google review us as well, you can. I don't know if that's possible.
We need a Google page. Not sure. We'll work on that.
Thank you for doing all those kind things. So if you want to keep up that work and share us to your Instagram story right now before you get into the thick of the episode, we would absolutely love that. Or leave us a 5-star, would be amazing. And if you want to hear us yab about what's going on in our personal running journeys and lives, then you can stay tuned. I wouldn't say skip forward, because we want you to listen to the bulk and the meaty content of the episode. But if you fancy listening to us have a good old chin wag, then stay to the end, because it's going to get spicy.
Don't skip anything. No fast forwarding. You're going to hear every word of this and enjoy it. And let us know what you think.
Alrighty.
All right. Welcome back to the Stronger Stride podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. We are super excited, as we usually are, but particularly excited today. We've got an international guest, which always just makes things even more exciting and thrilling. And we're really excited to speak to Joanna Garten today. How are you, Joanna?
I'm well. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. And you're in Denver, Colorado?
I am in Denver. That's right.
Awesome. Is Colorado, this will probably show my lack of understanding of the world, Colorado is kind of mountainous and beautiful scenery. Am I correct?
You totally nailed it. Yes.
Is it a bit of a running capital? Like, is that quite a place for distance runners? Yeah.
Yes, it certainly is. We're in the mountains here. So we're at altitude, and altitude training for runners is a thing, as you well know. So
Oh, nice. Yeah. We in Australia have basically zero altitude. So we use the humidity and call it the poor man's altitude is the humidity.
I'm not sure
if it has the same effects, but it feels like hard work. So maybe we're getting some similarities there. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us. We're really excited today to talk about your new book, which is coming out on the 2nd of April, which hopefully by the time this episode's coming out is within the next day or two, which is super exciting. Now, your book is called All in Stride, which, first of all, great name choice. As the Stronger Stride podcast, we are very happy that you've chosen that name. It's a fantastic word.
Thank you.
Now, this is a bit of a journey in running, courage, searching for the American dream. You speak to and share the stories of a couple of really incredible athletes, one being Shadrach Kipchoge, Elvin Kibet and Sammy Schultz, and their stories are incredible, inspiring, and I guess quite unique. I'm not sure how common their journey would be, but it was a really interesting read, and I'm excited to chat to you about it today.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Yeah, interesting, fascinating, and inspiring journeys, all three of them. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Before we chat too much about their stories, we'd love to hear a little bit about yourself, how you got into running, where that kind of journey came for you initially, what sort of sparked your interest in running, I guess where you took that, and then a little bit later on, how this book came about and where the idea for that came from.
Great. Yeah, happy to start with my own running. So I started running when I was little itty bitty, when I was like 7 or 8 years old. My mother was a long distance runner and marathoner in the 1970s and a real strong advocate for women in sports, and was around and pushing Title IX, which was an initiative in the United States that helped get more women and girls into sports and school and beyond. And so she was a runner, and I just started tagging along with her when she would do her long runs when I was very young. And then just kind of continued throughout middle school. I ran a little bit in high school, and then I competed in college at the Division I level here in the United States. And after college, continued and did one marathon. And as many of your listeners probably know, once you do one marathon, you can tend to get kind of hooked. And then there's a second and a third and a fourth. So I've been running ever since college, and it's just kind of my outlet and the thing that I turn to at all times when life is good, when life is hard. And so, it's a sport that I have loved for many, many decades.
Oh, that's awesome. It's so nice to hear where it all came from, like being inspired by your mom and kind of following in her footsteps or copying what she was doing. That's awesome. Have you spoken to her kind of about how she got into running? Because I imagine at that time, obviously we're having a running boom at the moment. There was a boom probably later on, 70s and 80s. How did she sort of get into it? And was that kind of, I don't know if it was frowned upon, or was it just a bit strange for people to do that then? Or what was the narrative around marathon running for women at the time?
Yeah, it was definitely a bit strange. I think she had a very sporty brother. Mm-hmm. It was just her and her brother. And she had a very sporty brother who was older than her. And she kind of always looked up to him. And he went on to a career in sports journalism. And so when she was young and in her 20s, she was also a journalist. And she kind of gravitated also towards sports stories and naturally was just around a lot of athletes and began running. Again, it was the early 70s. So it was kind of this first generation of women who were becoming super athletic in the 70s. And she just really fell in love with it for all the same reasons people fall in love with running now, right? She had a very stressful job as a journalist. And so she would come home and do these runs, and it was really just her outlet. And I'm so grateful that she fell in love with it, because it really helped me and on my journey, and as well, my sister too, who became a very good distance runner. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Isn't it interesting looking back on those things and I guess wondering if she had never found running, would you be doing what you're doing now? Like, it's obviously we're just never going to know that, but it does sound like you really took on a lot of what she was doing with obviously the journalism side of things and the running. It's kind of what you're doing now as well. Yeah. So it's awesome to see that you, were so inspired by what she was doing. And I'm sure she was quite proud of the decisions that you made and the steps that you've taken in your life as well. And it would have been nice to share those memories together.
Yeah. It was a fun journey in running through my childhood. And then also the fact that I ended up being a sports journalist and kind of following in her footsteps in that way as well has been wonderful. And both books that I've written three books. This is my third book. And the last two have been very much impacted by my mother and the legacies that she left with me. So happy about that.
Oh, that's awesome. And speaking about, I guess, that kind of time frame, the 1970s or slightly earlier, the foreword of your book by Catherine Switzer, I think that would be a really interesting thing to touch on. I think in terms of, I guess, milestones throughout running history, and particularly for females, she just obviously made such a mark on the whole running world, and I guess just took such a stand. How did you know Catherine prior to writing this book, and how did you go about kind of reaching out to her? And I'd love to hear what she's like. I'm sure she's an amazing woman.
Oh my gosh. I mean, one of the joys of writing this book has really been that I've gotten connected with Catherine. And there are just certain people in your life who cross into your orbit and are mentors, and it's breathtaking to know that you're even friends with them. And so that's kind of how I feel about Catherine. I did not know her prior to writing the book. I mean, I obviously knew of her because her journey in sport is so historic. As a lot of your listeners probably know, she ran Boston in 1967, and there was an attempt to kind of pull her off the race course in the Boston Marathon. And that really sort of sparked this generation of women's distance running. And I did not know her personally. I just knew of her story. But when I was looking for somebody to write the foreword to the book, I thought of her instantly because my mother had spoken so highly of her and her achievements. And then I realized that we had gone to the same university. And I thought, oh gosh, I've got a hook here.
Nice.
So that was kind of how I found her. It ends up that her agent is also the agent of one of the athletes that I had written about in this book. And so I had already been talking to him. And I said, by chance, do you think Catherine would be interested in writing the foreword? And he said, well, let me give you her email and you can email her yourself. And I did. And she was, of course, very gracious. So.
Oh, that's amazing. Isn't it funny how the world works like that? That 7 degrees of separation and, you know, just if you know someone that knows someone and just links you all together, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's a really cool connection and nice that you've kind of been able to form that relationship with her because, yeah, she does just seem like an incredible person. I mean, just to do that, what she did is so inspiring and it's so cool. I mean, just even just that photo, I'm sure everyone can visualize the photo of her being trying to get taken off the course. It's just so hard to imagine that happening. I guess like I've been fortunate enough to grow up in this generation where just women running, particularly in the countries that we've grown up in, is just very normal and respected and just no one really questions it. But to imagine going back into those times or potentially into other countries that aren't as accepting of it, it's hard to imagine. So seeing images like that and hearing stories from people like that is quite inspiring. So it's awesome that that's how you started the book. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's been a real joy. It's been a real joy for sure.
Yeah. Fantastic. And I guess we should chat a little bit about, I guess, the stars of the show. So Shadrach and Elvin, I think would be awesome to, I guess, understand probably prior to their story specifically, how did the idea of this book come about? You've obviously written those other two incredible books prior to this, which were more about your personal life and then another story about some mountaineering. Did you always want to write about runners specifically? How did this process kind of start?
Yeah, that's a great question. So upon the conclusion of my second book, which as you mentioned was about mountaineering, I knew that I wanted to continue writing about sports. I had loved writing that book and working with my mom had been wonderful. That was a book that she had started and that she had passed off to me to finish. After about 10 years, she could not work on the book any longer because of health reasons. And so she actually passed off that project to me and I finished it for her and just knew that I wanted a third book to be about sports. And living in Colorado, which is a really active state, everybody, it seems, is a runner. Including myself, I thought, well, running is kind of the low-hanging fruit. I should really write about running. That would be something close to my heart. So I started looking into just various running stories near my home, and there were a plethora. And I came across a program called the World Class Athlete Program, which is a program that's part of the U.S. Army. And it basically allows soldiers to train to become high-class Olympic caliber athletes.
Oh, wow.
And kind of it's a sort of a unit in the Army, much like the Army band is, or one of those sort of very specialized units that's just for endurance athletes, distance runners. This particular branch is based in Colorado Springs. So I learned about this program and had never heard about it, went down to Colorado Springs to watch one of their workouts. Colorado Springs is about an hour from Denver. And I happened to meet Shadrach Kipchirchir, who is a distance runner. He was no longer in the program at the time I met him, but he had come through the program, had served in the Army for about 4 years, and was now a professional athlete with Nike. And I sat down and I was talking with him as some of the athletes were training. He was injured at the time. And he started telling me his story of how he had been born in Kenya and come to the United States on a distance running scholarship. And I just got really absorbed in his story. And at one point he said, my story is very similar to that of my wife, Elvin, who's on the track running. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're somebody else who's in the program. And he said, yes. And so it just kind of unraveled from there.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. It's amazing how you were kind of seeking a story or looking out and doing your research and going about to find something. And I'm sure that's probably not what you're expecting, but having that initial conversation, I'm sure something just kind of tweaked in your head that this is the one, like this is the story, right? Like that is, you know, I think there's obviously just thousands, millions of incredible stories that you could write about. But something like that, that is so unique and so intertwined with so many different challenges and things that he would have had to face that not many of us would have had to face to get where he is. Obviously, becoming an elite professional athlete has its challenges, and it's an extremely challenging thing to reach for any of us. But then to go through what he has and to be brought up in rural Kenya and be running to school barefoot and to then move to America, like just there's so many parts of it that are just so incredible. So yeah, I'm not surprised that that was the one that made the book. It's amazing story.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was that hooked me. It was hearing him talk about his story. It kind of wove together all of these incredible pieces, right? Distance running, and there's this whole immigration component and becoming a citizen of another country and what it was like to make that journey, the things he had to achieve to become a professional. And then there's this whole military piece, the fact that he graduated college and then chose to join the US military, just an incredible sacrifice and one which he did because he really felt that he owed the United States that after bringing him to the United States and giving him this incredible education. So all of those pieces were woven into his story. And then when I met his wife, it was all of the same pieces and also all of the pieces about being a high performing female athlete, which has all sorts of other fascinating issues tied into it as well. So it was kind of a no-brainer by the time I finished that conversation with him that this was the book.
Yeah. And had you mentioned to him in that initial conversation that what you were there for, that you were looking to write a book, or did that come up later?
I said that I was a writer and that I was interested in learning about the program, the World Class Athlete Program, which was true. But at the time I really thought, well, this is maybe like an article, or I'll start with, you know, a magazine article or something. But it very quickly became clear that it was much more than that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I'd love to know what, I guess, his perspective, you know, when he's sharing his story, did you feel as, and I'm sure you would have learned more about this throughout the rest of the writing process, but initially, did you feel as though he felt kind of luck for the position he was in? Did you feel like he was, I'm assuming he was grateful for where he was, but was there a sense of, you know, I'm so lucky that it happened to me, or I've had to really work hard to get to where I am? Like, how did he kind of frame the position that he was in? Because it'd be interesting to know how he felt that his personal journey has gone. Because obviously we can look at it and go, that's incredible, that's inspiring, he's worked so hard. But how did he, I guess, frame the position he was in? Did he mention sort of how he felt being where he was in that moment, or did that come up later?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both, but I would say he definitely saw where he was as very lucky, you know, to have come from this very rural Kenyan village and be able to have the resources to go to a bigger city, to be able to train and catch the eye of an American coach from a university at just the right time, at just the right running track, and to be able to run the time he needed on the day that he needed to do that. So the coach was standing there and said, actually, I want to bring you to the United States. Like, there is a lot of luck involved in that part of his story. But as I often did throughout talking to him and in talking to Elvin as well, I had to remind them, yes, there was a lot of luck involved, but also you have worked very hard in your life. You create these moments in your life. And so there has been a great deal of sacrifice. I mean, not the least of which is the decision to leave your home country, to go to another country and create a life there. You know, there are sacrifices in that. So yeah, great question.
For sure. Yeah, no, I think, it's really, it's easy to sort of throw it away as like, oh, you're just so lucky, aren't you? Just so lucky. You've just got this perfect life now that you didn't have before. But as you said, the sacrifices they would have made, and just there are so many parts of it that just, there's no way it's just luck. There is, obviously they have to just work so hard just purely on the running side of things, let alone everything else. So it's nice to hear that you remind them of that. I think it's it would be easy for them to forget that, but it's really important.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that's something that I wanted to convey in the book in terms of this perception that individuals who come from other countries and decide to come to the United States and make a life, like, that's not the end of the story. I think there's a perception that you come here and then you're in America, so everything is perfect and you've achieved the American dream. But actually, there's so many more hurdles that you have to get over once you come here. You know, they are now Black Americans, and so they face continued bigotry, which has been very difficult for them to sort of adjust to. And there are lots of challenges that they have continued to face because they haven't been born in this country. So it's not always butterflies and chocolate cake when you come to the United States. So it's kind of this ongoing search for the American dream rather than they came here and that was the end of the story. It's just trading one set of challenges for another on many levels. And so that was really important for me to convey in the book.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think, yeah, you can't just get off the plane and go, okay, cool. Everything's great now. We've ticked that box. Everything's perfect. I think, yeah, you mentioned there's just so many more layers to it than that. I'd love to know when you met Elvin, when did she come into the picture? Was it kind of, you had that initial chat with Shadrach and then did you meet her straight away? Or was that something that came on later on?
I had that initial connection with him and I think I met her that day.
Okay.
But I started my conversations with him. So I would go down to Colorado Springs and spend a couple of hours with him, interviewing him. And she was kind of in the background, I think sort of checking me out and making sure that I was asking the right questions. So eventually she would sort of sit in to the interviews and I would kind of pepper her with a few questions and she opened up. And so over time, it became very clear that she had an equally compelling story. And eventually I sort of wove her into the process and said, okay, well, this is going to be about both of you, not just him, which made a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's nice. It would be hard without her to get the full picture and the full story. I think, yeah, it's so intertwined. So that's awesome. I'd love for you, obviously, we're going to encourage the listeners to get the book and read it for themselves. And that's the best way to get the full understanding of their story and the sheer just inspiring nature of it all. But if you don't mind giving us a bit of an overview of Shadrach's history of his life, how he grew up and how he made that decision to move to America and what that looked like as a bit of a kind of rough timeline.
So he was born in a small remote village in rural Kenya in kind of a farming community. I was able to travel to Kenya to do some research for the book, and I spent a lot of time in his village and the surrounding area. And he was one of, I think, nine kids in the family. And so he was working in the fields from a very early age. He was, as you often hear about, running to school barefoot many miles each day. So getting many miles in, which, you know, benefited him later in his running career. But he went all the way through high school in Kenya. Eventually, the last few years of high school were at a boarding school. And after he graduated high school, there's kind of a year after they take tests at the end of high school, year or 6 months, where they sort of have this decision about what they're going to do. And a lot of times, Kenyan youth will decide to try their hand at running because many Kenyans are naturally gifted. Genetics isn't the only reason, but that is something that is a component. And so many Kenyans, you know, try their hand at running. And so he had some family members who were very successful distance runners who were able to train him for a few months. And he did quite well at it. He really took to running and happened to be at the right place at the right time. As I mentioned, an American coach was coming to sort of scout Kenyan youth for scholarships at universities in the United States and spotted him, and he had run a great time and he was able to get a scholarship as I think he was 18 or 19 at the time when he got that scholarship, and then progressed and came over to the United States, started at a small university in Kentucky, and then eventually transferred to Oklahoma State University where he was for the last few years of college.
Do you know if he felt a lot of pressure to, you know, I'm sure he had a bit of talent there and he'd been running to school and he had some of that background fitness and then went through that training with the family. Do you know if he felt a lot of pressure to make it in running to then be able to provide for his family, or was it more just a bit of a dream that maybe he could go to America and do this incredible thing, or was there a need to sort of provide, you know?
There wasn't a need to provide for his family, but there definitely was a desire on the part of his parents for the children to be able to leave Kenya. Because at the time, his life very much looked like it was heading in the direction of possibly get a couple of years of university, but probably end up back in the village doing farming work with his family, which would have been fantastic. And a lot of his brothers and sisters did do that and took that path. But his parents very much believed in education and had from a very early age. So they were kind of really pressing their kids to take whatever opportunity came their way in terms of leaving Kenya and getting an education abroad. And so one of his older brothers had done that and was in the United States. And so his parents very much kind of gave him a nudge and said, you know, at least see if you could be a decent runner, not so much for them, but for his own future.
Okay. Yeah. No, that makes sense. And when he arrived in America, how was that? I imagine there's a bit of culture shock, right? Like a totally different experience, totally different way of living. Everything would be different, I'd imagine. How did he feel when he initially arrived?
Yeah, it was definitely different. I think as he's described, he landed in Kentucky and it was snowing, which was the first time he had ever seen snow.
Good start.
And he was quite cold. Yes, it was quite a shock. And he's talked to me at length about kind of those first few weeks and kind of wandering around campus and getting lost and very confused about, you know, being in the wrong building and sitting in classrooms, trying to absorb, you know, high level economics classes, which are being taught by a professor with a heavy Southern accent. And he's coming from Kenya with kind of a British American accent. And English is already sort of his second language because he had grown up in the village. So there, you know, just endless numbers of challenges that took a while to overcome, at least a year until he sort of felt settled for sure. And this was the same for Elvin as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that would be so hard. It's so hard. Even just, you know, when you go traveling in a country that doesn't speak English as their main language, even just that, trying to navigate, you know, getting public transport or doing any of those tasks that, you know, it's not your daily life, so it doesn't really matter so much, but trying to actually live there and just, you know, get into a normal routine and do your things and go to the places you need to. And yeah, that would be so challenging. I can't even imagine. And then, so he kind of, I assume he was in the track and field and cross country teams straight away from there. And then you mentioned he transferred. So that Oklahoma University, is that more of a prestigious or larger university?
It is. Yeah. He did well enough as a freshman at Western Kentucky that he was spotted by the coach for Oklahoma State University, which is a very prestigious university in terms of its distance running program. And so he was brought to Oklahoma State to run under that coach and did very well, won a national championship with his team in cross country. So that kind of got him on his trajectory, after which he left college and went on to professional running.
Yeah. Wow. So was that straight away as soon as he'd finished college, professional straight away?
Yeah. Yeah. After college, he went into the Army. He had enlisted in the Army his last year of college because, as I mentioned, he very much wanted to serve his country. So he was very much intending just kind of finish running and go into the Army and do the Army thing. But he realized that there was this program that was part of the Army, which would allow him to be a soldier and yet also continue running. So he graduated college and he went into basic training, which is about 8 weeks of very intense military training. And then after that, he was transferred. His first unit was this unit, which trained them at this high level of running.
Oh, that's perfect. That's so nice that he was able to do both things, because it would be hard. Obviously, he felt a real need to serve and to join the Army, and that was really important to him. But it would have been such a shame if, in order to do that, he had to give up the running, and then vice versa. You know, it's nice that he was able to do both. That sounds like a really great program. That's awesome. And how long was he in the Army for?
Yeah, he was in the Army for 4 years. And so his main, I would say, quote unquote, job was to run. But he also had to maintain regular military duties. And, you know, at any time, he had the possibility of being transferred out of that unit. The unit requires that you maintain these time standards. So if he had not maintained his time standards such that he could compete at an international level, he would have been transferred out. So he always sort of had to maintain these military duties and be ready to just go into a regular military unit at any time. But he was able to stay in that unit and run for 4 years. And then he left the Army after his 4-year contract was done.
Wow, that would be quite hard to balance that. you know, trying to do both well at the same time would be really challenging. I'm sure it was probably logistically a little bit easier once he had finished up those 4 years and was able to focus solely on the running side of things.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it is definitely a challenge to be able to maintain life as a soldier and then also train as a professional athlete. It's very hard. You know, most professional athletes, that is their job. Mm. But for these soldier athletes, they also have to, you know, kind of maintain their training. So it's very tricky. And there was, I know, a sense of relief once he finished his Army job. He was picked up by Nike for a sponsorship. And so then all he had to do was run professionally.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, even just, you know, the recovery, the sleep and stress and everything that comes with it. Obviously, when you're training at such a high level, there's such a demand on your body to perform and just to function and, you know, to get enough calories in to sustain the level that you're at, and adding on top of that, the stress and the physical side of the Army work as well. Yeah, it would have been hard to manage, but probably maybe it was good training, you know, like it was even more challenging. Yes. So then, you know, it set him up in a really good, a good level of fitness and ability from then on.
Yeah.
And then from there, how long until the Olympics was that?
That's a good question. I think he started in the Army in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And so he ran in 2016 in Rio. Mm-hmm. So it was about 2 years in that unit. And then he was off to the Olympic trials and qualified for the Olympic team in the 10,000 meters. So he was on the U.S. men's Olympic 10,000 meter team in 2016 in Rio.
Yeah, awesome. That would, yeah, I mean, just the Olympics would be such an incredible moment for anyone, but particularly someone with that kind of journey, would just to stand there in the American uniform with the flag and just, yeah, knowing what you've done to get into that position would just be incredible. Where does Elvin fit into all of this? When did they meet?
So they met in the United States. Her journey was very similar in terms of growing up in sort of a rural village and traveling to the city to get noticed by a distance coach. And she went to the University of Arizona. And so they met on a cross country course during college and started dating from a distance and fell in love and married. And she followed him to Portland after he was placed with the WCAP unit and began running professionally. She graduated college and went out to Portland and also continued her running career as well. And then they eventually got married. And just as he was leaving his Army service after 4 years, she decided to join. So she joined the Army just as he was leaving, and she is still in the Army. She's a sergeant in the Army and again has had a very similar trajectory as him in terms of trying to balance Army life and being a professional athlete. And now she's a mother. So it's tricky. There's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. With Elvin, you mentioned earlier about you know, the challenges of being a female athlete and what comes with that. Was there anything in particular that she discussed with you that she really felt was challenging, or was it just kind of, you know, what we know in terms of the differences in equality that still exist in kind of, you know, gender pay gap in terms of sponsorships, media coverage, all that kind of thing? Or was there something specific that she had noticed throughout her career?
I think there were a few things. You know, interestingly, her younger brother ended up at the University of Arizona at the same time she was there. And she noticed during college how many more accolades, not more accolades, but I would say how much more media coverage her brother got than she got, even though she was substantially more accomplished than him. So that was kind of interesting for her right off the beginning. And I think later she realized, I wonder if there's kind of a gender thing that plays into it. And I said, I would not be surprised if there were. So there was that. And then I think the other thing that she's had to juggle is being in the military. And, you know, she's one of the only women in this unit. It's mostly comprised of males who are distance runners. She's one of the only women. And so trying to balance the challenges of being a woman in the military, which it's a great minority of women who serve in the Army, as well as living in this world as a professional runner, has had a lot of challenges. And most notably, that's come into play as she's gone through pregnancy and had a baby and the postpartum journey, which is so difficult and challenging for women to navigate. And so I think that's been hard because a lot of people in the military, if they're men, don't necessarily understand all of those challenges and what it does to the female body. So I think that's been probably the most striking recent example that she's had.
Yeah. I guess there's that sense of an inability to be able to relate or to really empathize with what a woman is going through during that time. And I guess when you are, more surrounded in kind of a male dominated industry or workplace, that would probably be exacerbated, or you'd feel probably just a little bit less thought about or cared for or understood, which I imagine would be quite hard. So that would be really challenging to navigate. And their child is, are they about 2 years old now?
He's about 2 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
He's about two.
Yeah. Awesome. And so how was her journey back into running following the birth of her child, and how's that been coming back into running?
It's actually been very challenging, to be honest. Yeah, it's been very challenging. She had a difficult childbirth and some complications, and the expectation I think that she had, and that certainly her military leadership had, was that she would take a couple of months and that she'd start running again. And that in and of itself was very hard to run at any level for any woman who's given birth. But to be able to have a 2-month-old and come back and then run at the level that she was expected to was a practical impossibility. So it took a very long time for her to come back. She had some bone stress injuries during that first year after he was born, which is very common in postpartum women who are runners to have bone stress injuries. So navigating that was difficult and definitely a learning experience for the men who were coaching her, the men in her unit, the men who were leading her. So she was really a trailblazer, and I think feels that she paved the way on some level for women who will come behind her, because now she sort of set the bar in terms of expectations, and that women don't necessarily jump back right into the sport that they left.
Yeah, I think there's often this narrative about bouncing back, kind of, giving birth, spending a couple of months looking after your baby, and then all right, you're good to go. But it's such a traumatic thing that goes on physically and emotionally and everything. I would imagine that it's just there's no way it's that simple. So it's nice that she, obviously really hard for her to have to go through that kind of the first time in that situation, but nice to know that when that happens next time to someone else, it will be hopefully a little bit smoother or easier, or just, less expectations. Did she struggle? I'm sure someone who is a really high performing athlete would like to meet expectations and would like to be as good as they can be and be, not see themselves decreasing in performance. How did she kind of emotionally deal with the fact that she wasn't hitting these expectations?
I would say it was challenging for her. I think there were expectations that she put on herself that she would lose all the weight that she had gained within a couple of months, and that didn't necessarily happen. I think it was hard for her to watch other women who were professional distance runners who had had babies recently come back a little more quickly than she had. And so she spent a lot of time on social media sort of spiraling about where she should be. And it wasn't until Shadrach, I think, stepped in and said, "Hey, there's nothing wrong with you. You're on your own journey. So put your phone down and know that your body will come back in some form. And it might not be what it was, but it'll be a better version, because also you have this child here." So it definitely took a while for her to navigate that, especially the self-consciousness about her body, which says a lot about being a woman in our society, I think, for sure.
Yeah, there's so much pressure, particularly for athletes in that standard or high level. I can't imagine what that would be like. And I think it's interesting because, obviously there's still so little research on female athletes. We had Christine Yu on the podcast actually a while ago.
I've
seen that you've read her book, and she was, she's read yours as well. And kind of just trying to understand that the research is still emerging and we still don't know a lot. So I think it's probably quite rare for a lot of these really high performing female athletes to come back after having kids and to compete at the level that they were at before. But we've seen in Australia, particularly, we've got a bit of a, I guess, marathon running boom at the moment with our elite runners. We've got kind of 5 or 6 female athletes who are at the top of the game, kind of competing for this Olympic spot. And it's sort of there hasn't been that much competition at that level for quite a while, but a lot of these runners are mums now and their parents, and they're performing better than they were before, and they're setting PBs, and I wouldn't have expected that. And it's really interesting to see it. And it's almost like they've now got this extra level of, you know, ability to push through, ability to suffer because they've been through such a challenging, hard thing. And I think it'll be cool in the next sort of 10 or 20 years to see how that evolves. And we know that marathon runners typically peak a little bit later than some of the other sports as well. So will that play into it a little bit as well? I think, yeah, there's a bit of untapped potential there for a lot of athletes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's so good to hear, because the same thing is definitely happening in the United States. I was at the US Marathon Olympic Trials about a month ago in Orlando, and there were, oh my gosh, I wish I knew the exact number, at least 25 women who were competing who were moms, many who had, you know, babies under 6 months old. And it was so fabulous to see. And the amount of community that they're creating now around each other, and the support they're starting to get from the public and sponsors in particular, which has been hard to cultivate for many years, is really, it's really wonderful to see and heartening. So,
yeah, no, that's awesome. I'd love to know what you, I guess, have taken away from this book writing experience, particularly if there's any lessons that you've learned or anything from either of these two incredible people that you, I guess, have taken away or put into your own practice, whether that's your own approach with running, or if there's any kind of tips that you've gained or just lessons or reminders that you've learned throughout this process.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, there's so many. I mean, obviously, I think the lesson in perseverance is one that can't be overlooked. The journeys that they have gone on over the past 10 years to create these lives in the United States those journeys are so inspiring to me. And so I find often when I'm like spiraling about something very small, I have to take a moment to kind of check myself and say, oh my gosh, you really have it good. You have nothing to complain about. Talk about a position of privilege. You're really in it. So there's that. And then I think the thing that I mentioned earlier has really stuck with me, this concept of when you come to a place that seems as if it's perfect. Actually, maybe the United States doesn't necessarily seem so perfect from the outside anymore, but there are many wonderful, amazing things about the United States, but it is far from perfect. So I think, again, the perception that you come to a place like the United States and that everything will turn out beautifully and your life will be great, that is a misperception. And the challenges in creating a new life, are many and vast. And so to be able to appreciate that and to be able to appreciate those who have come to our country and the contributions they're making is something that that's really hit home with me and something that I think I'll recognize quite a bit more now.
Yeah, that's a fantastic lesson. And I guess, you know, in reality, nothing's perfect. So we kind of need to accept that and, yeah, appreciate what we've got, appreciate the little things. The grass isn't always greener. You've kind of got to move to the new grass, but then put in the work, you know, water the grass and keep it looking fresh. So I think, yeah, it's a really nice lesson to finish off. And the last question that we always ask our guests, which is very off topic from what we've been speaking about, kind of related, your favorite pair of running shoes, if you could only have one, what would you choose?
Oh my gosh. I love this question. Okay, well, here's the deal. I went shopping yesterday for a new pair of running shoes and I bought a new pair and I went off brand. I am a Hoka woman.
Oh,
a Hoka woman through and through.
Okay.
Bondi 8s are the shoes that I have worn forever. Well, some version of Bondi.
Yep.
And yesterday I bought New Balance.
Whoa. How did you decide to do that? What changed?
I just decided to mix it up. And am I crazy? Am I going to regret it? I don't know. I'm wild.
New Balance were they?
I bought the 1080s.
Oh, nice. I feel like if you're going to move from Hoka, that's probably not too far outside of the realm. You know, it's not a, you know, five finger Vibram shoe or anything. So similarities. Right. Be keen to hear how you go with them. I'm excited. Yes. They're fresh. That's have you run in them yet, or you literally just got them, right? Yeah. Oh, exciting. Well, let us know. Give us an update on how they go.
I will.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for your time. That was really, I really enjoyed hearing those stories. That was awesome. And I would really encourage everyone to get the book when it's available. I assume it'll be just available online probably for our Australian listeners.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. And you can get it in ebook form, and the audiobook should be up as well. So wherever you buy books online.
So many options. Yeah. And we'll have your website linked below and your Instagram and the Instagram of Shadrach and Elvin as well. So people can follow along with their journeys too. And I think it'll be really exciting to see where they go next and what's next for them and this next kind of chapter. And I really appreciate you bringing to light their story and sharing this with the world. I think it's so needed, and it's nice to hear stories from different people. You know, we're kind of often in our own bubble, in our own circle, and we don't often branch out and hear from different perspectives. So I think this is a really nice kind of eye-opening, inspiring journey that you shared. So thank you for taking the time to do so.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
I'm actually going to get my Strava up for the first time in Strava's 7 years.
Is 7 years.
Well, it feels like 7 years. It might as well. It's so long that I haven't even got it logged in on my computer.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't even know if I've got a password anymore. Oh, yeah. Here we go. I can still log in. How good is fingerprint ID? Like, saves my life because I don't have to remember any passwords.
Oh, nice. So, the hack. The there you go, everyone. Check that out. Well, do you want to kick us off then with your big Strava news?
What
are the K's?
Goodness, where do I start? I just don't even know where to start because there's just so many activities at the moment. It's just popping up all the time.
We need some summaries.
No. Basically, the updates are from me is that, well, if you haven't been listening, or maybe you have been following along closely, you'll probably know, the recap is that I've had a long time off running. I've had, I think 10-ish months, like completely not running, and a good 14 months of injury. And it has been 4 weeks now that I've been back, I think, or maybe five weeks. So I did a 3-week block and then I had a full week off and then another, the second block. I think I'm in week two of the second block. So I'm very excited and my body's actually feeling quite good. I'm really nervous to say that, but everything's feeling quite good. Like, I'm trying to be super conservative, running really slowly, having like sort of day on, day off running, and then obviously having that fourth week no running at all, which I feel like is a over the top conservative approach. But I just would rather be extra conservative because my foot is feeling so great, but I still am having some like nervy symptoms in my leg. And like, this week is actually the best those nervy symptoms have been. And I'm so happy because like, I had this fear that like, oh my gosh, what if those nervy symptoms are just being made worse by the running? I like was doubting myself for a little bit, like these little moments of doubt. And then this week has been the best it's been. And I think the main difference is I've just sat less. And so whenever I sit more, all my nervy stuff just gets worse. So like the pain in my shin, and like then it hurts when I drive, it hurts when I lay in bed, hurts when I swim. And like went for a dive this week, my shin was terrible. I like had to get out. I was like, this is not going to work. But then got out and like went for a run and I was like, oh, like everything's good again. So still very up and down, but like the ups are quite good that they kind of make up for the downs, you know?
Yeah, it's all relative, right? The highs are higher than the lows are lower. Someone actually was telling me last night, this is a bit off topic, but on the topic of highs and lows, they were saying the mountains in Europe seem so much higher than the ones in America, but only because the valleys are lower. The mountains are relative to the low valleys. The space between them is greater. Feeling, lifting up the floor. Are you with me? You're not looking like you're with me.
I'm with you now.
Okay. So we're lifting up internet from the bottom.
Is dodge.
Okay. So the floor is lifting and the ceiling, everything's rising. Do you know what I'm saying? The earth is flooding, but also so is your progress.
Gosh, that was a very mystical analogy. And I'm really here for it because I feel like your analogies don't normally get so spiritual, but that was quite nice. I'm not entirely sure. I got a bit lost with like, were they real mountains and real valleys, or are these in my head?
They were initially, but then the valleys are the parts where you are in pain, and then the high parts are where you're not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I think like That's a pretty common analogy, like the high school.
Oh, no. That was really unique and special.
But you did add a nice layer to it.
It wasn't about that. It was about the gap being closer.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Can I finish off my week?
Please, yes. Sorry for that rude interruption. That unnecessary interruption that added no value.
No, it was good. It was good. It was good. I just want to make a few points about my last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So I started off, my very first run back was 2Ks, and I've since hit a distance PB of this return to run of 10.5Ks.
Double Didge, the big DD.
The double Didge is here.
That's great.
It's so exciting. And the funniest thing happened on my, I thought it was funny. Shout out to James, if you're listening, from the Crusties. We're on this run and I was looking at my watch trying to stay in my zone too. And James is powering next to me, having a conversation with me. But you know, when someone runs just in front of you, because I trying to go a little bit faster. And I was like, look, James, I'm just going to sit back because I want to stay in zone two and that's not going to be zone two. And I might get the wording wrong, but he was like, oh no, are you really slow today? Are you feeling really slow? You're just having a bad day. And I was like, no, I feel great. This is the peak. This is my return to run peak. I'm thriving right now, but
you're on top of that mountain.
I'm slow. I'm not feeling slow. I am slow.
Oh.
Just my zone two pace is not the pace that it used to be, obviously. Right. And I just thought it was so funny because it's just amazing the difference in where you used to be and then where you are now, or where I used to be and where I am now. And I'm really enjoying that. I'm kind of enjoying the fact that I look at my watch and I get to a hill and I'm like, oh, well, we'll just have to walk this one just to keep the heart rate low.
Yeah, cut yourself some slack.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I think just because obviously where I'm at now, there's just more opportunity to progress because where I've returned the base, the bottom, I'm in the valley, right?
You're swimming.
the deepest depth of the valley. And so, you know, going back 2 or 3 months ago, I was struggling to walk more than a couple minutes. So
yeah,
it's a very lovely progression. And I think the feeling of progression is just such a good feeling. I'm also trying not to hold on to that progression too much because I know that rehab has ups and downs and it's very likely that I could have things go wrong and have another niggle pop up or just anything could happen. So I'm trying to not get too attached to the progress as much as it enthuses me and excites me. I'm trying to just enjoy every run for how it feels in the moment and the views and the scenes and the friends and the feelings and so fun. But also just accept that, you know, it might go back again and that's okay. And that's where I'm at.
Oh, it's so nice. It's nice to hear that you're on the up. I feel like for however many months it's been,
14
your updates of your training on here have been not on the up.
Sad.
It hasn't been on the up for a very long time. And now
I know
you're on the up. And yes, there will be dips and there will be valleys, don't you worry. But there are also mountains that you're going to climb. But it's just so nice. It's really, I'm so excited.
I know.
What I'm hoping by the time we record next is our updates. We say on Strava, well, we got the same run on Strava because we ran together.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And I'm ready for it. So,
yeah. Does that mean you're going to invite me on a run together? You're going to invite me for a little run catch-up?
Lucky.
Oh, that's exciting.
We'll see.
Gosh.
If you can keep up with me now, maybe not.
Well,
I might be doing laps around you.
Probably not.
You'll just be having another slow day.
No, well, you know what? This morning, I actually ran the fastest I ran in, obviously, 14 months. But it was a 7K. It was along the coast. It was with the Crusties Run Club. And I just ran at the start with my friends that were probably running a little bit too fast for me. But I kept on checking my heart rate and it was 135, 140. And I was like, oh, I've got this. I've got this.
Cruising.
And then by the time I got to the turnaround, I looked at my watch and it was 180. And I was like, damn it, I don't have this.
Oh.
So I had to slow down on the way back. But overall, my heart rate was still just in the zone two, and it was faster pace than I've run in 7 years, as I said before. Nice. When I say 7 years, I mean 10 months, but you know what I
mean. Feels the same. Yeah. Just on that, for the listeners who are listening, so everyone, if you're a listener and you're not listening, just don't listen. Can you just touch on briefly why you are focusing so much on this zone two at the moment when you're returning to your run? Let us know in 30 words or less.
Thank goodness you asked. All right. Well, referred to episode 111 where Sophie Lane talks about zone two. Now, I don't know what episode that is.
I was just thinking how impressed I was with your memory.
I know. But don't be too impressed because I made it up. Well, the main thing I'm just going to say is because it reduces my risk of tibial bone stress. That's like number one in summary, but also my adaptation from a cardiovascular perspective and mitochondrial density perspective is going to be better. So I'm actually going to make better cardiovascular gains going slower, and I'm going to reduce my risk of injury, not all injuries, but things like bone stress, things like tendon injuries, specifically Achilles tendon, perineals, any of that jazz, I'm going to reduce the risk of that. So that's really important to me because with my deconditioning, I'm at high risk of getting literally every injury, like, you know, all the usual runners injuries, like tendons and irritated joints and all that jazz. But things like bone stress, because I was very inactive and I still haven't been able to do any heavy squats, heavy lunges, deadlifts, and I've had bone stress in the past, my risk of bone stress is higher. So running really, really slow just gives me a little bit more of a safety net, I guess. And that's also why I've got that week off as well. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, gosh, it feels so good to like run a little bit faster, but it's just not worth it at the minute.
Okay, just one more question. For slower running, reduce this risk. You've said that zone two training or running slower gives you the safety net and reduces your risk of tibial bone stress injuries. How? Why? Is it not all the same? You're taking the same number of steps or you're out there for the same amount of time or even longer when you're running slower? How does the slower running reduce that?
Well, it's more about the forces. So the faster we run, the more forces our body has to endure. And when we think of, so, I mean, I guess like just thinking about the whole calf complex, because essentially that's all I'm really talking about. I'm not worried as much about things like femoral bone stress or like bone stress related to reduced energy intake or like being in an energy deficit because I'm like fueling before my runs and I haven't got a large amount of just like energy expenditure that my body's going to have. Well, I shouldn't have an issue with that. But when we think about the forces, so when we run faster, our calf muscle has to work harder to push us forward. And there's just like really clear research that looks at the forces produced by our calf muscle. As we run faster, it just goes up. And the calf muscle, if that works harder, the Achilles tendon has to work harder. So it's just more likely to get overloaded. And when we're not used to running, overload's very common, very likely. And then with our tibia in particular, the harder the calf works, and this is something that used to be a bit misunderstood about tibial bone stress, was that we used to think it was just like landing really heavy on your legs, but it's actually about the forces of the muscle pulling on the tibia. And I remember Mr. Bone Stress Bo, when we did a podcast, he spoke about a bow and arrow, and imagine that like the muscle is like pulling the tibia and the tibia is like the bendy part of the bow. I don't even know how a bow and arrow works, but like in my head, it's like the gastroc pulling on the tibia, which I think is how a bow and arrow works. This is making me question the bow and the arrow. I don't even know which part.
Yeah, no, it makes so
like,
much
what's
sense.
The name of the string and the wood? The string is the calf muscle. The wood is the tibia.
Yeah,
is
yeah, the, yeah, yeah.
But like
the arrow's got nothing
disregard,
to do with it.
Yeah, the arrow's out.
It's just the bow. But
like of the bow, I don't know the names of the parts. Like
the string and the wood, I think makes sense.
Okay, the string and the wood. So if you're familiar with the bow and arrow, throw the arrow out.
I think we've got it.
If you're familiar with the bow, the wood and the string, your calf is like a little string pulling on that wood. So if you want that wood to stay in good nick, then you need
stop pulling on it so hard.
Pull.
Okay. I thought we were so close to really like clarifying that, and that was so close to making so much sense. And now I think we've lost everyone. But rewind
I think the
a bit.
Arrow is what was confusing. The bow and arrow analogy sucks because there's a bloody arrow in the way. Get rid of that arrow.
Take that
Just
out.
Be the bow analogy.
Yeah.
Bow for bone. Anyway, the arrow can be like your forward momentum, your pace, all
right. So basically, run slower, reduce your force, therefore reduce your risk of bone stress injury.
Plus the cardiovascular gains. Like if you're wanting to get cardiovascularly fit, think of your mitochondrial density. Now, if you guys remember back to year 7 science,
have you got a visual for us?
The energy, what do they call it? The energy hub of the cells.
The powerhouse.
That's the one. Someone like the muscle emoji.
Oh.
I do the muscle emoji for everything. If in doubt, muscle emoji.
No. Cowboy emoji for you.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say.
Everything, everywhere. There's a cowboy emoji.
There's a cowboy. I know because I love the cowboy. So it's either the cowboy emoji or the mermaid or the muscle.
The top three.
Yeah. Occasionally I do the one with the sunnies because it's like, I'm really cool. That's cool. I just want people to know how cool I am. Occasionally I do the nerd one, but
when you're not feeling as cool?
I'm nerds. No, when I'm just trying to flex my intelligence, you know, just trying to show off with a little science fact. I don't think you should need to show that.
I think that should come out through your words. If you're having to put an emoji on there, you're obviously trying to overcompensate for your lack of nerdiness.
Well, that's it. It's my insecurity. I used to be peak nerd when I was in year 8, year 9.
Yeah, you've really declined.
And I think
then.
I've slipped off. I've just become so cool now.
Yeah, the coolness has taken over. You can't have both. Cool. You really can't do it all.
Yeah. I just have my sunnies on all the time and I'm really cool. I'm one of those cool runners. You know what? Just a note, one more thing. On the topic of like all these runners starting to run and all these run clubs forming, I love that there's so many runners running, but, like there's so many people running now, but I don't know if I'm cool enough to keep up with all these cool, trendy run clubs.
No, neither.
When I was into running as a kid, I was laughed at. I was the daggy runner. And this is why I've got to use that cool emoji now because I've really got to step up with my coolness. Yeah. So it's just, I'm a little bit insecure about it. So I'm working on it.
Well, look, the first step is admission. Admission? Admitting. Acknowledging. Can I talk about myself yet or what?
Yes, tell me about how
I'm just looking at my Strava waiting to let you know my updates. Oh,
tell me your stats. Oh, where do I begin?
Where do I begin? So, post-Cambra.
Cambra. Post the Cambra. The Cambra.
The Cambra half marathon. If you want to hear about that, check out the previous episode. I'm not going to talk about today. But moving on, we had a bit of a kind of a recovery week, but I wasn't really recovering because I didn't really run that hard.
You ran 40Ks in 2 days.
When?
This week.
I'm talking about the week before, mate.
You're right. Time goes quickly, okay? I thought it was still last week.
Anyway, so last week was a bit random. I hung out at the Backyard Ultra, which was so much fun. And guys, big news. I think I'm going to sign up for the next Backyard Ultra in October.
Oh.
How could I not? It's a bit of me, isn't it?
Yeah.
It makes sense, right?
I don't know why I looked so shocked because...
Yeah, I know. That was weird.
Yeah, that was surprising. I'm surprised at me.
I'm surprised by your surprise.
Yeah, me too.
I thought you'd be like, oh, of course.
Of course. Well... Okay. Yeah. You know what? I'm mostly surprised because I thought you were going to announce that you're a photographer now, not a runner.
Oh, that too.
And so I was surprised that you were like telling about signing up because I was like,
oh,
I thought you were going to be the photographer from now on.
I can do both. I'll run super quick and then spend the rest of the time in that hour taking photos.
Oh, yeah. Well, why not?
Yeah.
If anyone hasn't seen on social media, Sophie Lane's posting some pickies. She's branching out. You know, I'm getting into swimming and diving and dipping.
What do you mean getting into?
So well, is in a couple of years now. And Sophie Lane is getting into photography and unicycling.
Yeah.
We really like to broaden our skill set.
We do. We are very diverse. Anyway, this week's been good. I had a tough session on Tuesday at the track. Did 5 by 1600 meters.
Oh.
What?
Solid.
Yeah, it's big, isn't it? You know what? That's really big. Isn't that like 8Ks?
Yeah.
It's 5 and then it's 3. That's 8. That's a lot of like fast running. I was running.
Yes.
4:30 to 4:35 pace.
Wow.
Pretty solid. She's if I quick. Do say so myself. And then my next day was a midweek long run, also with some Delta people who are fast. And that was hard as well, but we got through it, 17Ks. I feel like a proper, you know, like every other running podcast, and they just go through their training weeks of like 17Ks at 4:30 pace. I feel like that's me right now. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, I should be doing that as well.
You should be. Give us the stats. Yeah, but my other big news is I'm going to Europe in July.
Oh, my gosh. I know.
And I'm actually, when we finish this recording, I just want to screen share you this event that I found. Guys, I found this trail. Obviously, there's lots of trail runs in Europe. But I found this one in Austria. And it looks so cute. And like, it just looks like a little, it just looks so nice. And the views are amazing. And it's got that like very typical European start line vibe where it's like dark and all the like crowd with their cowbells, and it just looks so fun.
cowboy so well.
You would with your sunnies on. So yeah, so I'm excited about that. So I need to get into the hills, I need to get into the trails and get mountain fit. That's the project.
Oh, I'm so like, this is just so good. I'm very excited. This is just going to be amazing. And you need to train for this.
I know.
Seriously. Like,
I can't get there and not be able to do it, right? I need, because, yeah, it's going to be like a good few weeks of solid mountain efforts.
Yes. You need to get on the hills. Like,
yeah. ASAP. Well, I think I'm going to go to the Blue Mountains tomorrow.
Oh, good. Amazing. Gosh.
And when you're ready on a Sunday for a little jaunt, let me know.
I know. Yeah. Well, yeah. As soon as I can. As soon as I can, I'll be there. In fact, actually, our next event together, guys, if you're listening, this is not too late to attend.
Ooh, yeah.
Sydney Marathon Run Club.
Oh, yes. Are you
Sophie
going?
Sophie Lane reminded me of.
Yay.
Well, I'd planned to go, but I just hadn't looked at when it was. So, guys, 28th, Sunday the 28th, next weekend, Barangaroo, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm going to guess 6 or 7 a.m., 12Ks.
7:30.
Yep. 7:30, something like that. Halfway through the bloody day.
It's late, isn't it?
What are we going to do before that? So guys, if you want to be involved, I don't know. I can't say what it's like because technically I haven't done one yet for this season, for the 2024 Sydney Marathon season. But last year it was so much fun. And I just have a good feeling that this year it's going to be even more fun. So guys, get around it. I also think too, and this is something that I'm actually really keen for, is that the size is a little bit smaller than what it was when we were like very close to the lead up of the Mara last year. And like, I actually am realizing that I think I prefer slightly smaller run clubs because I think you get to chat to everyone a little bit more.
Oh yeah.
And for me, the connection and the chatting and all that is like the most exciting thing in
ever.
Life.
Full stop.
I mean, it can't is beat the it. Meaning yeah. of life.
That is the peak of the mountain. Yeah. Yes, I'm excited for that. Also on that date, the 28th of April, Sunday, Lydia and myself are going to be, drum roll, UTA Q&A panelist extraordinaires. We're going to be on the mic answering all your burning questions about Ultra Trail Australia and trail running in general. We're going to be talking about gear. We're going to be talking about injuries. We're going to be talking about training. We're going to be talking about the course. There's going to be a nutritionist on the panel, potentially talking about all the things you need to eat and drink while you're running. So get along. It's also free. So you really have no excuse not to be there. Details will be linked below and also on our Instagram. And yeah, Coogee Diggers, 5:30 p.m. Sunday, 28th. So you can hang out with us all day. The run in the morning. Then just relax in the middle of the day, and then we're on the mic in the evening.
It's like a Strongest Ride festival. Strongest Ride, some would
sleepover.
Say.
Festival.
Who's sleeping? Who sleeps in the middle of the day?
All right, that's enough yibber yabbering from us. We're going to wrap up there. We'll have everything we spoke about linked below, won't we, Lids? You're on the caption duties, right?
So
don't forget
yeah.
all those linky links. We'll be in there. Check out our Instagram if you want to see some great pics of us. And we'll see you on Sunday the 28th at the run in the morning and at the Q&A in the evening.
That's it, guys. Enjoy the episode. Well, you've already finished the episode. Enjoy your day.
Enjoy it again. You can always listen to it twice.
Yes. And
but
guys,
if you do that, listen to it on different platforms so it counts as two listens. Thanks.
Oh, yes. Great thinking. I love it. All right. Ciao.